OTM Radio. Entrepreneurs on the move, reshaping life for a better tomorrow.
What's going on? My name is Stephen Knight, and you listen to The Stephen Knight Show.
I know we broke your heart, tears rolling down your face. You know I'm coming over to make sure you're okay. You don't have to wait, I'm a crazy babe. I'm a Superman, you can go and play. You're on my way,
good evening and welcome to the Stephen Knight Show here on EOTM Radio. I want to thank you for joining us again tonight. As always, we'll be discussing the latest in entertainment news, sports, fashion, and movie reviews. Of course, our question of the day, and then tonight we welcome two incredible authors with two amazing and very different stories. Dr. Jeanette Raymond, who wrote Now You Want Me, Now You Don't, and then John Bozica, if I pronounce his name correctly, who co-authored the book Not My Daughter. Very interesting story. As always, I want you to call in with your questions and comments. The number is 718-664-6543. Again, that's 718-664-6543. You can also join us in chat. There's a link on our Facebook page. I also want to remind you to connect with us on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and, of course, our website, StephenKnightShow.webs.com. So definitely connect with them there. Now, unfortunately, we have some very sad news to report. Many of you already know that comedian Robin Williams died tonight at apparent suicide. He was 63 years old. And Ms. Parker, I know you're on. Do you have any thoughts about this?
Yeah, I mean, anytime somebody takes their own life, it's definitely a sad occasion. And, you know, they said the people who usually make us laugh are the ones who are usually in the deepest darkness of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I certainly my condolences and well wishes as far as recovering from this to his family. I know he has some pretty young kids, and I certainly hope that they're able to find some comfort in his memory.
Absolutely. You know, mental illness, and that's what Dr. Drew, he was on the scene, and I was watching it before the show tonight, and he was saying how, you know, most people have severe depression. It's a mental illness. And so, you know, he had struggled with addiction, with alcoholism, which he was open about, and recently went to rehab again. Dr. Drew seems to think it was more so for the depression, not really the alcoholism. But regardless, we want to thank him for 40 years of great laughs. You know, I know as a kid we used to watch Mrs. Doubtfire all the time. We loved that movie. That movie had us crying. And so, you know, all the great work he's done over 40 years. So we definitely are sending our thoughts and prayers to his family and his fans all over the world. Now, before we go to Ms. Ferguson, she needs to go first tonight. But before we go there, I want to let everyone know that the 2014 Hottest Entertainment Awards nominations have been announced. And the Stephen Knight Show picked up another nomination for Hottest Online Radio Show. Remember, we won it back in 2012. And then I've picked up two nominations for my music, Hottest Male Vocalist and Hottest Rising Superstar. We definitely need you to vote so we can win the award again. Go to ATLHottest.com. There's links on our Facebook page and or our website where you can go and it's easy. Just find us under those categories and vote for us. We definitely appreciate you. And shout out to Pasky Entertainment for nominating me. Now, Ms. Ferguson, how are you doing tonight?
Hi, I'm doing all right. How are you?
Pretty good. How was your weekend?
I can't complain. You know, I didn't get a chance to go to the mall, but I'm sure I'll get a chance to go this weekend.
I know you're depressed.
Very, yes.
You have some good stuff for us tonight?
I do. And a lot of the stuff that I have for you guys tonight is actually just in time. I know it's actually a little late for back to school, but it really is kind of just in time for it because they have a lot of good things on sale right now. You know, you still may be able to take advantage of the back to school shopping, even though school's already started. First I wanted to share with you guys a sale for Old Navy. They're having a sale on select items, and it's pretty much the majority of their store minus their clearance. And the sooner you shop, the sooner you're, the more you'll save. So if you shop today, you can get 25% off of your purchase. And if you shop tomorrow, tomorrow only, you can get, I'm sorry, if you shop today, you can get 25% off of your purchase. And tomorrow, you can get 20% off of your purchase. And if you're shopping online, you have to use code SAVEMORE. Today only and online only, the Limited is having a sale. And if you shop now, you can buy one, get one free on all pants and jeans. The Gap is having a friends and family event. And if you shop there now, you can save 40% on your purchase. And the sale is online and it's in it. They're also carrying it over to their factory outlet stores. So if you're shopping online, you can use code TODAY. The Young, Fabulous, and Broke is having a sale event at Nordstrom. And the Nordstrom, I think I told you guys about this. The last time I told you about it, they were having a Tory Burch sale event, but this time it's Young, Fabulous, and Broke. And this is at Nordstrom. And, of course, they put, like, the majority of the items from this brand on sale. J. Crew is having a Now and Later event. Sale event, and if you shop there now, you can save 25% off of select styles. And if you're shopping online, you need to use code Now and Later. Today only, Express is having a denim sale, and if you shop there today only, women's jeans are $39.90, and men's jeans are just $49.90. So it doesn't matter what style. All jeans are $39.90 for women and $49.90 for men. Piperline.com is having a sale now through the 13th, and if you shop there now, you can get 25% off of select styles. And these styles are actually meant to ease you into the fall, basically make it a smooth transition from summer to fall. So you can get 25% off of those select styles. And you need to use code MUSTHAVE with an S. And last but not least, teachers and students can shop Forever 21 and receive a 15% off, a 15% teachers and students discount.
Oh, wow.
And I'm so
that's
happy you guys this evening.
That's real nice. The teachers get a little discount as well.
Yes, I think that was a very nice sale that they put on for teachers and students.
Absolutely. And they can find all this at budgetshopaholic.com. There's a link on our Facebook page and our website, and I just tweeted it. So go on budgetshopaholic.com and find out all the great sales that Janera works diligently to help us find. Thank you, Janera, as always.
Thank you, Stephen.
And have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.
Well, let's post your house on the weekend. Chandler's on mute. Okay.
Talking to me.
No, I thought the Parker was there, but might have lost it.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, Aaron, what's going on with you?
Oh, okay. Oh, man. No, man, just excited. Football season started up preseason, but still, you know, it's better than soccer. So I'm all hyped about that. That's about it, man. Just life is good.
That was good. And yes, anything – what any games that stuck out? I know it's preseason. Any games that stuck out to you?
Yeah, the Washington Redskins. You know, since I live here and everything, that's definitely a team that I've been watching for like a couple of years. If I sound like I'm out of breath, literally, I just ran out the car in the rain to come into the house, so I might be out of breath for like a little bit. So please excuse me. But yeah, the Redskins with of course Robert Griffin coming back from injury, they have a brand new coach. They have a brand new wide receiver with DeSean Jackson. As you can hear, I am so excited that I'm just stuttering like crazy. yeah, their offense. It should be great. On paper, it looks like it's going to be explosive, fast, just a high-scoring offense, hoping that the defense will match the offense. So Okay.
That's
always been the issue with the Redskins, is that their defense lets them down year after year after year. So hopefully, fingers crossed, this year will be the year where their defense will actually hold up. So we'll definitely see about that. Oh, Michael Vick's with the Jets now. I don't know if you knew that or not. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Vic looked good. Vic, yeah. That would be a team that I would be definitely watching. If Geno Smith does not step up this year, I can easily see Vic coming in starting. Geno, you are on notice, brother. Step up, or Michael Vick will definitely take your spot. Cleveland, Johnny Manziel, Johnny Football, Johnny Heisman. Yeah, you can, going on. He played. He did okay. I mean, it was. He didn't play much, but he looked good. I am not a hater. He looked good.
Right.
So props to him, Cleveland. Another team, who else stood out to me? Jacksonville won. Okay, pretty.
You don't sound
all right.
Excited.
Okay.
You don't sound excited.
Exactly. Okay. Moving on, let's see. Who else stood out? Oh, the Houston Texans, man. They had the number one pick in the draft this year. Their number one pick actually played pretty well, but the team in general sucks, and they did not score a single point in their opening preseason game. They lost, I think it was 38-0. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So Houston, we have a problem. So hopefully they'll be able to. So clean it up and, at least be able to score a touchdown. So let's see. Oh, Denver, the Denver-Seattle game, that was a very good game. Denver actually won. It was a fun game. Russell Wilson, the quarterback for the Seahawks. The Super Bowl winning quarterback of the Seattle Seahawks. He actually looked good, as always. I have to stress that, yes. He has earned that. He has definitely earned that. They look good. Seattle looks good. Denver looks good. I wouldn't be surprised if those two teams are back in the Super Bowl again this coming season, coming Super Bowl. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, they're to me, they are the epitome. It's those, the Seahawks are the top in the NFC, and Denver is the top in the AFC, and then everyone else kind of falls into place.
Wow. Well, we'll definitely see what happens.
Yeah, well, and go ahead.
And I was saying, what you said was with the sports segment?
Yeah, that's pretty much
okay.
The sports.
Both Chike and Adam are out today. They've had prior commitments, but I was going to say, I know that you said you saw a movie you want to talk about.
Get on up, man. Get on up. Get on
James
up.
James Brown story.
Woo-wee. I enjoyed that movie. I see James Brown in such different light now. Like,
a lot of people say that. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, like he.
How so?
The man was actually very intelligent. He was very smart. I mean, just business-wise, like he was very business savvy. And he didn't have much of an education, but just his common sense street hustle, if you will, like
right.
He really was smart. He knew that 1 + 1 = 2. And if someone tried to tell him that, 1 + 1 = 6, he will look at them like they're crazy. He's just amazing. Amazing guy. I'm trying to think. Oh, the one scene where he was talking to the promoter, or no, he was talking to his agent or manager or something, and he was like, yo, why are we paying to have a promoter and giving, you know, and we're not getting money at the door? Why don't, you know, why don't we get people to promote it for us via the, like, local radio DJs that are, like, struggling, and just pretty much hire our own team to promote for us, and then all the revenue that we get for the ticket sales goes to us. You know, like, we get all the money. In other words, skipping the middleman.
The common sense and the street sense.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize that Mr. Brown had a private jet, you know, way back then. Mr. Brown was on. Yeah, he was on it. He had that hair laid out and conked out, and I get, like, I see where a lot of entertainers got their swag from.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay,
yeah.
Michael Jackson, of course, Prince, definitely. Even Bobby Brown back in the late 80s, early 90s, like, I saw James Brown and Bobby Brown. Like, you just, even with, like, the how they sing and their stage presence, and Usher, Chris Brown, I mean, it's amazing. It's Mick Jagger, what's Steven Tyler from Aerosmith? You can go on and on.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many, you know, guys from so many different genres of music, and women also, that got their style from James Brown, that took a piece from James Brown and,
right,
you know, made it their own.
Yeah, fascinating.
James Brown was before his time. And also wanted to mention also that in the movie they give props to Little Richard, and that James Brown actually saw Little Richard performing, and James, I think, took some of what he saw from Little Richard and made it his own. So got to give props to Little Richard also, you know, because, you know, he feels like he never gets any respect. Well, Mr. Richard, they gave you props and respect in this movie. James Brown definitely saw you as someone to look up to. So, yeah. But, yeah, it was a great movie. Really, 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 really great movie. And I highly recommend it. So there's my Chike and Adam moment right there. Ron,
thank you for the review. Tell everybody where they can keep up with you and follow you.
Yo, follow me on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, first name Aaron, last name Cosby. Look forward to hearing from y'all. And all right, Mr. Knight and everybody, I'll talk to y'all next week.
All right, have a good one.
All right, TK.
All right.
So let's party. How was your weekend? I saw you out and about a little bit in the streets.
Yeah, I mean, I was on bridesmaid duty. Nothing big to really talk about. I kind of chilled out on Saturday. Had some bridesmaid duties to do with the girls. Nothing
crazy. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
To talk about. But I wanted to mention a couple of things that I've seen on the news lately.
Okay.
Y'all need to stop. Be careful with these selfies, because it's not worth it. I just read two stories in the New York Post. One couple died, fell off the cliff while taking a selfie.
Oh, gosh.
The kids right there. And this other dude in Mexico blew out his brains taking a selfie with a gun to his head, and it was loaded, and blew out his own brain.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
I think that's selfie to a whole new level.
They're going too far. Just like some of these Facebook challenges, you've seen them. Like the one woman, she got arrested because they've been doing the setting themselves on fire. The teenagers, they've been in the shower, and then they pour alcohol and stuff, light a lighter or a match.
Yeah,
and,
but
and
what
then,
would make somebody think that's a good idea?
But then the mother helped. The mother helped her son do it, and now she's in jail.
Needs to be.
I mean, that's crazy. Some of these challenges, it's too much. And one girl, she did a challenge. I thought I couldn't even watch the whole thing. It was a condom challenge where you snort the condom through your nose and bring it out your mouth.
What?
Yeah, it's just, it's crazy. It is crazy what these people are doing. It's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So listen,
I'm speechless right now. She did what?
Yeah.
I'm like, huh, I still can't get past
right.
that.
Yeah. It's been crazy. I'll tell you, I saw the nicest thing today. This morning I got up early, which I usually don't do on Mondays, but I got up early and I was going on a long walk, which I usually do during the week. And I saw, you know, a lot of kids are going back to school, and I saw this mother with her son probably was going to kindergarten, and they were in the driveway, and she was taking a picture of him, you know, his, I guess his first day out. And I thought that was very nice saying that.
Yeah, I saw a lot of first day. I know some of the kids started it about a week ago, and
some
kids started today. I saw a lot of back to school really cute pictures first day back to school. I know these parents are excited. The kids out here go to school a lot sooner than the kids on the West Coast. Don't go back.
In Virginia too. In Virginia, don't go back to after Labor Day.
But I'm sure their parents not complaining. So
sure not.
So they were really cute first day back to school.
Well, I posted an article, a link last week. Apparently, one of the teachers wasn't excited to be going back to school because she showed up the first day drunk, and she was in another classroom with her underwear down. And when they asked her, the police officer interviewed her, she did admit to drinking vodka earlier that morning. So,
I
guess she was kind of stressed.
I saw that. I think I banned LOL or something. But reading the article, it was her first. She was a new teacher.
Oh, wow.
So it was her first year. Like, it was supposed to be her first day ever teaching. I guess she said she
had I mean,
when I read where it was, it's like in the backwoods of Oklahoma somewhere. I think I was thinking myself, they probably just needed somebody in that classroom. They knew she was an alcoholic and a drunk. Because she looked like she stayed drunk from the pictures I saw.
Yeah, she was real, so I'm pretty sure somebody knew,
but I think they just needed some teachers that said, we're hard-pressed. If you can make it through, come on. But she just couldn't make it through that. She couldn't make it through them 8 hours.
Showed up drunk.
I guess she couldn't make it through the first hour.
Let me ask you, so they're trying to say that Kanye West and Kim Kardashian kind of threw a jab at Beyonce and Jay-Z because they took a picture kissing an outfit. Do you think people are reaching right now?
Yes.
Exactly. They probably didn't think about that.
I don't think they even thought about it when they took their picture. They just wanted to take a picture on social media so they can get some likes and keep their name out there. They weren't thinking about no Beyonce and Jay-Z elevator, nothing.
Yeah. Did you read up on the whole Mike Brown, the teenager who got shot.
I was hoping you wouldn't ask me this because I think my opinion is probably very different on the situation than most black people. I think that it is a sad thing. I think that the police officers are kind of overreaching their authority in a lot of cases. But I will say this. I am so sick and tired of black people. Want to protest, want to do this, want to do that, somebody else killed us. When there are thousands of black men being killed every year in an inner city by black men, and we say nothing. I haven't seen one petition for a signature. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen one protest about let's stop the violence in our own community. If you don't value your own lives, your young people don't value each other's lives. They're shooting each other because you stepped on my sidewalk and this is my territory type stuff. What makes you think somebody else is supposed to look at you and think that your life is valuable?
I'm
sick and tired of black folks. I mean, every time if somebody else, you know, does something, they're outraged, which they should be. But I think this outrage needs to be
towards us as well.
When it's against us, and there have been more black men killed in Chicago this year than the entire war in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Soldiers, the entire war in Iraq. That is ridiculous. We are killing each other at an alarming rate, and I don't hear anything about it. But when I say something about it on social media, I get all kinds of messages. You know, you shouldn't speak like that, and all these crazy things, but no one ever wants to address the real issue. And
I agree.
The problem is not going to be fixed until we start looking internally.
Right, yeah. And then even in dealing with this particular case of Mike Brown, you know, they had the peace rally, you know, for him, and there was a fight there. You know, there was violence broke out there. And then now there's this person, and I really, anyone listening, and I hope that this is not the way to go. The anonymous hackers have said they're threatening the police. They're going to retaliate on the police as a result of this killing. And that's not going to solve anything. That's just going to make things worse between the police and between the community. You know, especially in black community, if this kind of tension is already out there in this area, and then they're retaliating and just anonymously attacking the police officers, that's not gonna do anything.
That's not gonna solve anything. And another thing is too, when there is a crime being committed by someone outside of our race against somebody who is black. So for example, there was some pictures taken of Mike Brown laying on the ground. It's a very sad story, and I feel horrible for his family. I'm not trying to dismiss that at all. But when we have crimes in our own community that are committed by black people, then there's a no snitching. You can't find one witness, one camera, one picture. It's like we're destroying our own community, but then no one wants to talk about that. So I do think there are two separate issues, but then I think they're more of the same issues than they are separated, because I think what it is perception is key. If you have no value for your own community, no one is going to value your community. No one is going to value the people that live in your community. Period.
Very true. Very true. Very true. Very true. It's sad, and I just really hope that, you know, we finally get to the point where we can pull together as a community. You know, we all need to pull together as humankind, but definitely as a community, because we're hurting our own selves. We're hurting our own selves, and this retaliation and all this, it's just crazy. It's getting out of hand. It's getting out of hand. Well, let's switch gears before we go to commercial breaks. I want to ask Ms. Parker and see if you have any advice. Question of the day. I want everyone to go on Facebook and Twitter and let us know what you think.
I don't have no relationship advice for nobody. I mean, you feel that relationship thing tough on Facebook with a question of the day. I have no advice. I'm still trying to figure it out. I'm taking advice.
The question of the day is, what is the best piece of relationship advice you would give someone? Go on Facebook and go on Twitter and let us know what you think. And we'll be right back after this.
You're listening to the Steve and Knight Talk Show on EOTM Radio. You're listening now. You're listening to the Steve and Knight Talk Show on EOTM Radio. The Steve and Knight Show, Monday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on EOTMRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Steve and Knight Show. I want to remind you that the Steve and Knight Show and me, we have all been nominated for the 2014 Hottest Entertainment Awards. Steve and I show for the hottest online radio show, which we picked up the award for in 2012. And then I've been nominated for two awards, Hottest Vocalist Male and Hottest Rising Superstar. So go to ATLHottest.com. There's a full link on our website. But go to that and vote for us. We appreciate your votes. Just to connect with us on social media, on Facebook, the Steve and I Show, Twitter, Steve and I Show, SHO. Google Plus, and our official website is thestevenightshow.webs.com. We're starting to get some of your responses to the question of the day, and I'm going to read some of those while we wait for our first guest. Our guest is here. She's not here. Okay. So we're going to read some of the questions to answer the question of the day. So the question of the day was, what piece of relationship advice would you give someone? All right, LaFran says, never go to bed mad at one another. Keith, he said, be yourself. Tony said, stop and think about how the other half may feel. Brian said, keep folks out your business. Good advice. Gerald said, put God first. Kenya said, don't hold anything in. Let it be known, even if it hurts. Because keeping it in can cause more damage than good. And yes, be yourself. Let's see. Gerald also said, being transparent.
Will said, don't listen to the advice of other people. Live your life and your significant other and work things out on your own. Tony said, that's smart, Will. Jennifer said, put God first and pray together. Dolores said, don't ignore the red flags. If it doesn't feel right, it probably isn't. And Tori said, when people show you who they are, believe them. Maya Angelou. And then Jay Ferguson said, you're going to fuss, you're going to argue, but if you truly are in love, at the end of the day, no one's going to go anywhere. So if you have any advice you would give, definitely let us know. Go on Facebook and Twitter, let us know. Let's see if we have any music queued up while we can play while we're waiting on Dr. Jeanette. I'm very excited about Dr. Jeanette because her book is about her theory is that men need, you know, intimacy, the emotional intimacy more than women. Women need it far less, and it talks about how couples can sometimes there'll be a breakdown in that intimacy where they're too afraid of getting too connected. And usually it's after they've been together for a while, they start having children. So it's very interesting. I can't wait to have her come on. While we're waiting, we're going to play a little bit of music, and we'll be right back. That's Gia. All right, well, while we wait for Dr. Jeanette, I'm going to get to our first guest. Our second guest is going to be our first guest tonight. His name is John
Buzanka.
Bazinga. Thank you so much, Bazinga. Really, I was trying to get that all day. Okay, Bazinga.
No worries. The
controversial topic of assisted reproduction technology is an example of modern biological science being pushed to the ethical limit. This book is being written from the point of the view of the father, at least in the eyes of the court, who contested his obligation to pay child support and disvalued the child that had been legally recognized as his daughter. The secondary aspect of Not My Daughter will involve the intrigue and drama of a drug smuggler's lifestyle, John Bazinga's lifestyle, for almost two decades. It was the odyssey that took him from small-time drug dealer to organizing a crew that smuggled tons of marijuana by plane from Mexico into California. Please help me welcome one of the authors of Not My Daughter, John Bazinga. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on and telling your story. You know, I was reading over it, and I was just like, wow, there's so much to this. Tell us a little bit about, before we get into the actual book, tell us a little bit about, your upbringing and how you got to where this all starts.
Well, it's completely opposite of how it all ended up. I came from a pretty normal family, mother and father, perfect citizens. No dysfunctionality in the family, and I just drifted off in the wrong direction.
Okay. And so you started, selling marijuana, locally. How did it get to this big, you basically running everything?
Well, in those days, it was, especially in the beach communities in Southern California, it wasn't an uncommon thing, but it started out just selling small amounts of marijuana, and as the longer I stayed in it, the more people I met, the more they were doing, then I got to that point where I was doing, I was right there at the, doing pretty much the most you could do.
Right, okay. So tell us why you decided to go ahead and write this book and tell your story, not only of, that past, but also of the daughter. About the daughter, I don't know if you consider her your daughter, but about the young lady involved.
Well, at the time, upon the advice of my attorney, I had remained relatively quiet while the case was being litigated or ruled upon, and that was from 1995 to 1998. Up to that point, everything that is pretty much known was from my former wife's perspective or what appeared in newspapers and magazines. And I had a bought on a 48 hours, and it was pretty much me. It portrayed me as this guy that was just trying to get out of paying child support, and
that wasn't the deal.
I made my intentions perfectly clear to my former wife before I signed this thing that this wasn't working for me. I was doing this for her because basically I felt sorry for her. I was leaving her. And at the same time, the only thing that seemed to matter was naming parents because in this case, there were five potential parents because there's no biological connection between myself, my wife, there was an egg donor, there was a sperm donor, and there was a surrogate. So there were five potential parents and seemed adamant about naming parents, and they never researched our backgrounds or status for being suitable as parents, and they named us parents. And I intentionally waited until the child support obligation was over before I wrote this book, just because I thought that might be the better thing to do. Because I didn't want people to think this was just about sour grapes about me having to pay child support because I paid it. So.
Right. Yeah. So once the court, assigned you the parent, biological parent, over this child, I mean, what was going through your mind at that time? Because you knew it wasn't yours.
Well, I'm sorry. What court ruled made that ruling?
Once they made that ruling that it was indeed your child, what was going on with you at that time? Because you knew that wasn't your child.
I just kept on pursuing my career at the time. I worked in a law office. I kept pursuing my career and just kept going forward and paying child support. That's what I was ordered to do. That's what I had to do. So I never pursued any type of relationship with the child. I didn't think that was fair to the child, nor did I have a desire to. So, and mm-hmm. I made that clear to my former wife from the time I was walking out the door. And so I stayed steady to what I had told her, and you know that hopefully that doesn't seem callous, but that's how it was.
Right. So who's raising the daughter?
I believe my former wife raised the daughter. The only time I've seen my former wife in the last 18 years is in court.
Okay. So you never met the young lady? You never met the daughter?
Never met her. No, I have no idea what she looks like.
Okay. How do you think your criminal past played a part in not wanting to have children in the first place?
Well, I didn't think really my lifestyle was conducive to having a family and having kids around that, because it wasn't safe. It wasn't
right. Yeah,
certainly wasn't fair. And I had legitimate business. I had a legitimate business. I actually had two legitimate businesses, but the majority of my income was coming from the drug trade. And I one of the businesses was actually just open just as a front for some big deal that fell through. But anyway, so I raising a family, starting a family wasn't what was on my mind at the time. My mind was doing what I was doing and staying out of trouble. That was my mindset.
Right. And you just start bringing a child into that would just be chaotic for the child. It wouldn't be a safe place for the child to be.
Oh, no. Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah.
So when did you turn things around and decide to leave the drug alone?
Oh, I got arrested in 1991 in New Mexico at an airport with a plane full of marijuana.
Mm.
And that put an abrupt halt to everything. And so from that point forward, I had to start over. And from that point forward, that's when my former wife seemed to think a child would fix everything.
So she thought by you being arrested and having to start over, having that child
that was going to fix our marriage and everything else. Yeah.
Okay. So because you had been in that business, you know, the drug world for what, two decades, pretty much, correct?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I was close to it. Yeah.
Okay.
Close to that.
And so you two were together the whole time, your wife?
No, we weren't together the whole time. We were together. We got married in 1988, and we were separated in 1994.
Okay.
And
So having a child was in her. She thought it would help save the marriage.
I think that was part of her thinking, and I thought she thought that might keep me there. And yeah, but I believe that was part of her thinking. I'm not sure.
Okay. And so I know you said you felt that your wife used the family law system to get you to pay support for her own selfish desires. Can you explain that?
Yeah, she, my former wife perpetrated fraud on everyone involved in this case, including the surrogate, the surrogacy agency, the courts, and me. She even went so far as to steal mail from the surrogate's mailbox to prevent her from finding out of our pending divorce. And I don't even know how she got that child out of the hospital, because she refused to. My name wasn't on the birth certificate. Her name mm-hmm. wasn't on the birth certificate, and she wouldn't adopt the kid until I was named the father of that kid, which was 3 years after she walked out of that hospital with the baby. And the reason she wouldn't adopt the baby, because if she could have adopted the baby on her own, raised the child on her own, which she ended up doing anyway. But if I wasn't named the father, she couldn't have collected. If my name wasn't on the birth certificate as a father,
right.
She couldn't have collected child support. So, I mean, and I don't know. I just, that left a real bitter taste in my mouth.
I know that a lot of times in cases like this, you know, the child, they often, maybe they see the birth certificate and they say, okay, this is my father, I'm going to try to find him. What would you say to this young lady? I know you never met her. If she were to try to find you, try to reach out to you and maybe get your side of the story, what would you tell her?
I'd tell her the truth. I mean, I would tell her the truth. And the last thing in the world I'd want to do is inflict any kind of emotional pain on
right,
this young woman that I've never met. I mean, that's not who I am, but
right.
I mean that it just wasn't for me, and I felt I wasn't in the position to be a father, and that's how it was, and that's the decision
right.
I made.
Right. Yeah. But you have that right. If you know, and I think that any parent that any person that decides they don't want to have children shouldn't have children, because obviously they probably won't be
yeah.
a great parent.
And the thing is I could have lowered my monthly child support obligations by pursuing visitation rights, but
mm-hmm.
I chose not to do that because I didn't think that would be fair to that child. I didn't. And I know a lot of biological fathers that do that. Yeah. In this case, I'm not the biological father. I had no intention of being the father. So I thought I was doing the right thing, and like I said, I paid the support, and I waited to write this book until afterwards. So.
Right, because the book came out earlier this year. What do you want people to get this book? And there's a link on our website and also on our Facebook page where they can purchase their copy. It's a very intriguing book. What do you want people to take away from when they close that last page?
You know, I think it's funny because on the news tonight, there was a mess over a surrogacy case, and it seems to me that it's a crazy industry. When I was doing research for this book, I called a local surrogacy agent here in Orange County, and I told the woman that answered the phone that I was doing research to write a book on surrogacy, and I was wondering if she'd answer a couple questions. She agreed. And my first question was, what are the standards for potential parents in order for them to have a child through surrogacy? And right without blinking, right out of her mouth, she said, surrogacy is one of the most under-regulated businesses in the industry. There's no
wow.
regulation. Basically, nothing's really changed. And in California, she said, the parents are based on case law in California. One of those cases is my case. It's In re Bazanka versus Bazanka. That's how they determine if you're a parent, if there's some kind of problem down the road. So they made it case law that if you sign a contract, you're going to be the parent. And
mm-hmm.
I had to live with that, but my problem was the contract was never litigated, and it was because that didn't suit public policy. Public policy overruled contract law. And my problem with that is I was named a father based on this contract. I would have liked to have litigated it, and it just
yeah.
never happened.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because there's a human being involved, and I get, you know, I'm not this cold, heartless person
right.
that doesn't
right.
know that there's this young woman out there right now that I don't know if she's had a father figure in her life or not. I have no idea, but you know, I get that. I just thought that from my perspective, if that's what they're going to name me the father based on this contract, I think I should have been able, because I think I had some decent defenses to that contract.
Right. And I understand. Yeah, I think I get your point that people may look at you like, how can you not want to care for the daughter? But the thing is, you never wanted a child. You didn't have a child, but because of a contract, you became a father that you didn't even rate, but you did. But you did support. You did support.
Yeah, and you know what? I like kids, but I did not want to. I was done with that marriage at that point. I was done
right.
with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know that. You know, and like I told my former wife outside the courtroom once when I saw her in the past 5 years, I said, you know, if that was me that wanted this child as bad as you did, and you left me, I would have taken that child, raised the child, and you never would have heard from me again. And
mm-hmm.
that's how. But see, she had ulterior motives, and so that's where she was coming from.
Wow. Well, John, thank you so much for coming and telling your story on the Stephen Knight Show. The book is called Not My Daughter, The True Story of a Former Drug Trafficker and a Landmark Surrogacy Case. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
All right. You have a good one.
You too.
And you can go on, again, go on our Facebook page and our website and see where you can pick up that book. When we come back, we'll be back with Dr. Jeanette right after this.
You're listening to The Stephen Knight Talk Show on EOTM Radio. You're listening now. You're listening to the Steve and Knight Talk Show on EOTM Radio.
The Steve and Knight Show, Monday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on EOTMRadio.com.
And now you want me, now you don't. Dr. Jeanette Raymond stands conventional wisdom on its head by showing that men often long for emotional intimacy more than women, and many women use sex to connect as an emotional closeness. Readers are given a ringside seat in the therapist's office as Rick and Christy seek couples counseling with Dr. Raymond. Here to tell us more, Dr. Jeanette Raymond. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Steve. Great to be with you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You know, I was reading up on this book, and I'm like, wow, I think, especially because it's for this couple, I believe they're 30, early 30s, and I think, you know,
yes,
this is something that people go through at this time. First, before we get into the book, tell us a little bit about your background and, you know, kind of how you got to writing this book.
Okay, sure. I worked in the UK as a psychologist with kids for about 16 years, and I saw how insecure they got because of the way their parents were handling their marriage and their own difficulties. So mm-hmm. I got to see how they grew up to become somebody like Rick and Christy in the book. And then when I got here, I've been working with adults, and I developed a passion for helping people who are struggling with their relationship to feel secure and loved and connected so that they don't then pass it on to the next generation. And that's
right.
What I've been finding in my work, that, you know, the men that call me up in the last 10 years, they will say, I want to save my marriage, I want to get close to my wife, but she won't let me in. And I buy her flowers, and I take her out, and I give her a break, and I help with the kids, but she doesn't care, she doesn't let me in, and she, you know, she's not interested in that. And then I hear from the women something very different. When they call me, they're upset that their men are not good boys. They're not doing what they're supposed to do. They don't do the right thing. They don't take care of things properly. They don't bring enough money. They lie. They cheat. They don't take care of the kids. They want to fool around. They're not serious. That's the kind of message I get from the different genders, and I try to bring them together and see what's causing them not to connect.
Mm. Okay. And some of the things you said men do, you said those are some of the most common mistakes men make in trying to get emotionally close to their partners. You said, I'm trying to spoil them with flowers and dinners and vacations. Why would you say that's a mistake, a common mistake?
Okay, that's a great question. The reason is because you're not being yourself in the moment. You're wanting something. You're trying to soften the woman up. You're trying to make her feel something that she doesn't already feel. When intimacy is about being your authentic self, whether you're angry or excited or bored or whatever it is, it's about being kind of emotionally naked with your partner. So you can be wherever you're at, they can be wherever they're at, and you don't mind each other seeing it, and you can kind of tolerate it and be okay with it.
Okay. And why would you say people are afraid of letting their partners? You would think, you know, especially if a couple, and I've assumed this couple was married. They get married. You would think they have some kind of connection. Why do you think that emotional, you know, that part is lost in their relationship?
Okay, you're asking me some wonderful questions, so kudos to you.
Thank you.
No, really, you are. You know, you're asking me really, really important questions, because this is what I find a couple coming and saying, like a year after their marriage or a couple of years, you know, they got a kid. We had the best time when we were dating. We thought we were made
mm-hmm.
for each other. We're soulmates.
Right.
And then now, what happened? Where's it all gone? Did we imagine it? You know, have we changed or what's gone wrong? Well, the secret is, nothing changed except that when they first met and they were going through the romantic part of their experience together, their love affair, they were only seeing the good bits.
Mm.
They were seeing what they wanted to see. They were seeing the ideal, the perfection, the fantasy in their mind, and they block everything else out. You know that saying, love is blind, it's very true.
Yes.
Right. You know, you're blind to certain things, because if you saw all the faults in someone or things that might irritate you or that don't match up to your ideals, you'd probably never fall in love and never get married and always be alone. You know?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So then later on, you're seeing all these things. You kind of see the person in a bit more depth, that they can get angry, they may have short tempers, they may not always be smelling nice, so they may not always be thoughtful and considerate and unselfish and all that. And then you get angry because it feels like, hey, I got sold a bill of goods, you know. This is not who I signed up for.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what I get all the time from my patients. They tell me, this is not the man I married, or the man said, this is not the woman I married. She was so loving and warm, and she always wanted to know how I felt, and she was always wanting to be close, and she, in fact, it was too much. She wanted to know too much about me, you know, and the man will say, the woman will say, sorry, you know, and he was so kind and thoughtful, and he had eyes only for me. He was so attentive. He was so gallant and all these things, and now he couldn't care less. He's out with his friends and he snores and he doesn't care about me and all that. So they kind of get disillusioned, and what they're not realizing is they never had that emotional intimacy in the first place. They didn't allow each other to be who they were and be okay with it. You know, so what I help them understand is that both of them may have fears of different kinds that prevent that from happening, because, like I said, to be emotionally intimate, you have to be naked in that moment with all your good bits and your bad bits and your ugly bits and your beautiful bits. And people love you because of that, not because you're some ideal of perfection.
Exactly. And how do you think a couple, because obviously it seems like, you know, based on this information, that a couple should be emotionally close before marriage. Do you think that can happen, or do you think it does take that time of actually living in each other's space and growing together? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think if they take the time to learn about each other and be okay with each other, in the sense that they're both human and they've both got good bits and bad bits and ugly bits and beautiful bits and all that, like nobody's perfect, they're both human.
Right.
It mm-hmm. can happen. But I think that people don't like it, because that feeling of euphoria you get when you're in love, when everything looks wonderful and there's no, you know, there's no black bits in your rosy picture, they don't
right.
want to lose that feeling. They think there's something missing.
Mm.
So it doesn't feel worth it to them at that time. But what I have found is that second or third marriages, they get over that. And
okay.
then they realize, like, look, I've been through, I know what it's like to fall in love and get married and then be disappointed and let down and all that. So this time I'm going to make sure I really know the person and get to see them warts and all, you know.
Exactly.
And then, right, so that they can do it at that time, except for one thing. If one party continues to try to be perfect, and what I say is they try to seduce their partner with their goodness. Like, you've got to love me and you've got to want me because I'm such a good person.
Yeah.
I do such good things. And that doesn't help intimacy, because when you're trying to be good, you're telling the other person that you're better than them. So it kind of puts you on a different level. So how can you be intimate if you're up and they're down?
Right, yeah. There's no balance.
No.
There's no balance.
Exactly.
You talk about the fear of being people getting emotionally attached, couples getting emotionally attached. The fear. How do those fears develop?
It's not a fear of being emotionally attached so much as what might happen if you let your guard down.
Okay.
Because they're already
yes.
attached. You know, they're already
okay.
attached.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
But that's a good point. Okay. So how do these fears develop? Let's start with men, you know, and maybe this might resonate with you and your experience of growing up. You know, in what I hear from men is, and I see it with boys, you know, when I'm seeing families,
mm-hmm.
they get told that, you know, boys don't cry, boys don't
mm-hmm.
have feelings, they've just got to get up and get on with it, they've got to fix everybody else's problems, they must be strong and not show anything, and pretend that they can handle anything. And they're not supposed to be mama's boys. You know, they're not supposed to be needing affection and, you know, having long talks and about feelings and all that sort of stuff. You know, they're supposed to be rough and ready and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And if they've had dads that don't show emotion and mothers that kind of try to baby them, then they want to feel like, no, I don't need all that babying. Get away from me. You know, I'm strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they kind of hide that part of them that's human and that needs a close connection without feeling weak. It's just part of who we are. We're human beings, and we need to be connected and feel close to people so that we can feel stable and secure in our life. So that's
okay.
What happens to boys. You know,
okay.
And then when they get to be adults and they start a romantic relationship, that part of them that they've kept hidden and buried suddenly comes out. And they say, oh, maybe now I can get that love and affection and that closeness because I don't have to keep it buried anymore. My wife says she wants it. And, of course, in the early days in the relationship, she did want it.
Right.
You know, that's what she was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
But then as soon as he does it, she says, oh, stop being a baby.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
Stop being
yeah.
a child and go mow the lawn or clean the car or whatever, you know.
And that hurts the man's ego. Don't you think it hurts the man's ego?
Yeah, and it's very bruising because then he's having the same treatment he did as a kid, and he doesn't. So then he says, "I'll buy her flowers, or I'll surprise her with a new, you know, oven or whatever it might, new clothes or something, you know."
Right. Yeah.
With the woman, it's a little bit of a different story. So when she's a little girl, she's sometimes told not to have any emotional needs because her mom needs all the air in the room and dad must take care of the mom, not of the little girl. And if you're a really good girl, if you're a really, really good girl, because that's what girls are supposed to be, they're supposed to be really good, then you have to take care of other people, you have to be unselfish, you have to put yourself last, you have to take care of the men. And by doing that, that means you make them comfortable and you don't force them to take care of you emotionally, other than they can spoil you a little bit, you know, and they can take you out and show their appreciation, or you can give them your body sexually, but don't expect them to care about you emotionally. So when the woman grows up and she's buried all these feelings, her natural, normal feelings of tenderness and wanting to be close and feel cared for and wanted, like we all do, she grows up burying all that, and she responds to the man who's spoiling her and taking her out and making her feel beautiful and wanting her company and showing her off, because that's what happened when she was a kid.
Right,
but
yeah.
Her need to be close is still there, but she's terrified that if she shows it, if she lets her guard down, she's going to be weak, he's going to take advantage of her, he's going to think she's soft, he's going to walk away. He'll find somebody else. Maybe there's nothing there. Maybe he's going to feel like it's all gooey and messy in there, and he's going to go, yuck, you know, not for me.
This
is what happens, and it's really sad.
So is that why, you know, what you're doing with this book is trying to break down one couple at a time so they get past it, so that they don't repeat these same patterns with their children, and so that it doesn't become a recidivism type of ordeal. Yeah, okay. So for some people that are listening at home that may not get what you mean, because a lot of people when they hear intimacy, they're thinking cuddling or sex. What do you mean when you say emotional intimacy? When you're having that with your partner, a remote, you know, romantic relationships, what does that mean?
Well, it's not just in romance. It could be in any relationship, but it's really about letting your true self be known to you and your partner. So you're not trying to cover it up by having a certain image or pretending to be perfect or pretending to be interested when you're bored. It's just being your real self, like I said, naked in that place, that you're not ashamed of yourself. You're not trying to hide anything. You're not pretending to be somebody you're not, just to get something or to make an impression or whatever, or to avoid something bad happening to you on both sides. And the other important component is it's got to be in the moment. You know, what I often find is people are not who they really are in the moment, and then they get upset because they're getting hurt and they're feeling misunderstood and all that. And then 10 hours later or the next week, oh, but I really felt this. So then they kind of go back in time, and it's too late. You know, so it's got to be in the moment. It's got to be fresh. It's got to be real with no sugar coating or anything else. And it's because you are who you are that you're loved for who you are. That's the intimacy, not for what you think you should be or what somebody else expects of you or what you learned society thinks you should be doing in this or that situation. Because you can only keep up the pretense for so long, and then you're going to blow.
Exactly. And yeah, it'll come out. Right.
Yeah.
So what would you suggest for, like, say there's, you know, a relationship and one party, one member of the relationship wants to be emotionally intimate with their partner, but the other, they're not really, you know, on the same page. What advice would you give?
Well, I'll give you a few little tips that your listeners might want to follow, and some of them are really simple. For example, I often find with couples that they take on different roles. You know, one person does the laundry, somebody else does the car. One person takes the kids to school, somebody else does another job. They very rarely do things together. And one of the ways in which you can begin the process of getting close and emotionally comfortable with one another is to do a job together. So if you're in the kitchen, you can peel the potatoes and somebody else can make the soup or cut the bread, you know. While you're doing that, you're talking, oh, you know, I remember when my dad used to do this. I remember my sister did this or that. And you're sharing a memory, they're sharing a memory, and you kind of build a connection without it being you know, something you're trying to force on the other one or trying to create an impression, or you're not pretending. And in that moment, you're creating a memory that belongs only to the two of you. It's a moment of togetherness that you never would otherwise have, and that makes you feel safe and secure, so that next time your partner comes and wants to be close, you won't be so scared. You know, you'll remember that good time. You'll remember that moment where you things and it felt so good.
Wow. Before we go, I want to ask you our question. Our question of the day is, what is the best advice you would give, what kind of relationship advice you would give a couple? What would be yours?
A couple who are trying to get this, I say never give up hope.
Okay.
And if you're willing to explore all the hurts of your childhood, and kind of take your needs out of the coffin, because this is the one thing that puts obstacles in people's way, is I don't need anything. I'm fine. And if I do, it means I'm weak and I'm bad and I'm ashamed of myself. You know, we need people because that's who we are. We're human beings. We're social animals. And it's not because you can't do anything for yourself or you're a weak or you're a helpless infant. It's because we need connection to feel stable, to feel secure, to feel that we've got our feet on the ground, and then we can live a full life. If you're not secure and stable, then you're always trying to, you know, be anxious and fix something or change something, or you're never content. So it's you're not being needy by saying, I need a connection. That's the one obstacle. So if you can take yourself out of that coffin and say, it's okay for me to need to be connected with my partner, then you will be, but it also will involve you being open and accepting and tolerant of needs on both ends. It's not about he can have all his needs, but I can't have mine, or vice versa. It's not taking turns. It's doing it together.
Quick question, talking about that. So, because you find a lot of people who in their eyes, they open themselves up to, you know, someone, and then they get hurt, and then they shut down. Open myself up again. I'll never do that again. What advice do you give someone that does open themselves up to their partner, but then, you know, it may not work out, and they get hurt, and then they shut down? How do they open that door again? How to open that window?
Yeah, that's a great question. First, it's very normal to shut down after you've been hurt like that, because you're going to want to protect yourself and regroup. But if you remember that the other person's probably feeling exactly the same thing, you're probably not aware of when they reached out to you and you shut down. So the thing to remember, and this is a really nice visual image, I call it a rope of connection. So imagine that there's a rope between the two of you. You're holding one end, your partner's holding the other end. Now, sometimes that rope will be really tight, and you're feeling totally connected and together, and the world is your oyster. Another time, you feel the rope is slack, you know, that your partner's let go of it a little bit, so you can't get close, and it comes in kind of boomerangs on you. But don't forget, they've still got that thread of the rope at the other end. They're still holding on to you. They haven't let go completely. And if you remember that, you're still connected. They haven't completely shut you out or killed you off. They still need you, but not quite as tight. So it's a question of managing the tightness. Sometimes it'll be very tight, sometimes a little loose, but the connection will always be there. And it's not always a feel-good one. Sometimes we connect best when we're having the biggest fight of our lives. Because you're feeling aroused and angry and upset. It means you're connected. You care. That person matters to you. It's not always warm and fuzzy.
Wow. Great advice. Great advice. Thank you so much, Dr. Jeanette Raymond, for coming on the show. The book is called Now That You Want Me. No, Now You Want Me, Now You Don't. Fear of Intimacy, 10 Ways to Recognize It and 10 Ways to Manage It in Your Relationships. There's a link on our Facebook page and our website. Thank you so much again, Dr. Raymond. And, I mean, definitely useful information. I definitely appreciate it.
Thank you. And let me just share with you, you've asked me some of the best questions I've had on any interview.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. I think this is something that people, they can resonate with. You know, people... You know, it was funny. We were talking about, you know, the best relationship advice. People say, I don't know. I'm still trying to figure it out, you know. So I definitely appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Okay, good luck.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye.
We'll be right back after this with Stephen's Playlist.
Check out the EOTM Media Group. Yeah, the EOTM Media Group. We're a new media company encompassing radio, PR, and TV. Follow us on Twitter at EOTMPR. For a great publicist, there's one thing you need to do. Contact the EOTM Media Group.
Welcome back to the Stephen Knight Show. I'm going to go straight into the playlist. The first song is by Sam Smith and Mary J. Blige entitled Stay With Me. I love this song. He has a version by himself, and then he teamed up with Mary J. Blige for a remix, and they sound really good together. So check it out and enjoy Stephen's Playlist.
So won't you stay with me?
watch on. I already know you gon' make it, 'cause it happens every time. But now with you, all I gotta say is hey, hey, baby, baby, I got your love. Hey, 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 to you, you can have it all.
When it's beneficial, I'ma forgive, I won't forget, but I'ma dead the issue. Soon as you out of the niggas' lives, it's when they start to miss you. They see you doing good, now it's kinda hard to diss you. Niggas be sick when they remember all the bad they wished you. Niggas be mad when they can't come and live lavish with you. But I sped off in the Benzie. I see the envy when I'm causing a frenzy. So I pop pills for 'em. Cop cribs in the hills on 'em.
Pills and potions. I'm angry, but I still love you. Pills and potions, we're overdosing. Can't stand it, but I still love you.
I still love.
Just the other day, we turned and walked away. Put you all alone, heart full of pain. Never said goodbye, put you there to cry. Broken down, standing in the rain. Hey, wipe all your tears away. Cause I can't be saved today. For the anguish, the pain, the hate, it's gonna be okay. I know we broke your heart, tears rolling down your face. You know I'm coming over to make sure you're okay. You don't have to wait, I'ma save the day. Call me Superman, you can go and play. Girl, I'm on my way.
For tonight, I want to thank tonight's guests, Dr. Jeanette Raymond and John Bazanka, for definitely coming on and get their bookshelf. The link's on our Facebook page and our website. Definitely two great books you definitely want to read. I want to thank you for joining us tonight. And don't forget to go to ATLsHottest.com and vote for us, the Stephen Knight Show, for the hottest online radio show, and then for me, for the hottest male vocalist and hottest rising superstar. As always, we thank you for your support. Have a great week. And we'll talk next week. God bless.
I know we broke your heart, tears rolling down your face. You know I'm coming over to make sure you're okay. You don't have to wait. I'm a crazy day. Call me Superman. You know a thing. You're on my way. Girl, I'm on my way.